Well, this is it for Amazing Grace. Actually, no, Amazing Grace continues, but the series, yeah, might not. We're having a great time here, and I am so always encouraged by just the praise time we have, and different things kind of pop up and encourage me every week. And today it was Michael on the recorder there during the Revelation song. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like it just grabbed me. And it was good. And I just a sense of, I thought, is that a recorder? What I asked Sally, what is that thing? Because, you know, the recorders I ever saw were like plastic and like third grade. Yeah, that. That was so good. Okay. Well, today we're going to be in Luke 15. And really, if you have a Bible, I think it's going to be better for you. If you have a paper Bible, you know, I'm a little bit leaning that way. If you have a phone that has your Bible, that's okay too, you know. You still can go to heaven. Maybe. You know, a lot of times phrases, sayings that we use come up in just our normal speech and culture. Last week in the Daniel class, they talked about the story where one of the phrases that comes up in culture a lot is, you've seen the handwriting on the wall. You know what that means? It's bad, right? You see the handwriting on the wall, something bad's happening. Well, that's from what? Well, most of the people who would use that phrase may not have ever heard of the story in Daniel 5, but that's where it comes from. Well, we also have this relationship with the term the prodigal, right? The prodigal. And some of the people who may use the term don't know where the prodigal comes from. But it's the story in Luke 15. And so we're going to talk about that today. Now, the handout, oh, what'd I do with that? It's different, okay? The handout this week is pretty different, and so is the PowerPoint. I'm not even sure. In a minute, we're going to do something that looks like that. Okay, and the handout's going to be kind of like that. So we're headed there in a minute. And so when you get the handout, don't panic. You still got to write some stuff. That box that has context, that's the last point. That's the closing part. So don't mess with that box that's on the right-hand side white. You're going to write notes up by each of the little balls. See all the little balls? You're going to write notes there. If you want to, you know, of course, you never have to write notes. That's just kind of like something to do. And some of you just might want to draw pictures because that's good too. Keeps you going. Not a bad thing. Not a bad thing to draw pictures on your notes because sometimes that's where you get it going. Some idea comes to you. But we're going to get to this in just a minute. So first, I want to back up and talk about this idea of the prodigal son story in the middle of Luke 15, and really the idea of grace in general being there's a bigger picture. And that's what we're going to think about at the beginning, and then we'll come back to that in the end. The grace that we have received, the gifts from God, and we've talked about it for a while here. We're going to talk about this bigger picture today, and we're going to do that as we go through the book, the chapter 15 of Luke. So if you got a Bible, you're going to get in there, and it's chapter 15, the prodigal son story. But there's more. And like I said, there's a bigger picture. So this on the screen is a what? Can you tell what that is? Banana split. So the key ingredients to a banana split are what? Bananas and ice cream, right? Banana and ice cream. But if you just had a banana and a chunk of vanilla ice cream on it, that would still be good, right? But it really wouldn't be all of this thing you're looking at, right? And that's kind of what I want to say the story in Luke 15 is like. The key part is definitely about the banana. God, I guess, I don't know, or maybe it's the son, but the prodigal son. But those are kind of the main things people focus on, the banana and the ice cream, or God and this prodigal son. But there's more to it. And so we're going to really kind of think about the more too. So in this picture, it's the cherry. Now, do any of y'all like cherries on your banana split? See, I'm not a cherry guy. So if I got this particular banana split, I would take the cherries off, hand them to someone who liked them, or birds like them, I think, or ants, something. So they would go, they're biodegradable, right? So they'd go out. But I definitely would be eating some of the other things that are on that banana split. But still, I want to get down to the banana too, right? I'm not going to. So today we're going to talk about maybe more than just the banana and the ice cream, but maybe that's too long on that anyway, really. So here we are. We're going to talk about this story in Luke 15, the heart of God. And so I'm going to begin just at the beginning where we're going to say it's verse 1. Okay, which is kind of interesting. So in verse 1, what we'll be talking about, I'm going to read it. The tax collectors and sinners were gathering around to hear Jesus. But when the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Okay, so this is going to be really the beginning. And you see these two balls over there? One, I'm calling these round things balls on your handout too. So the tax collectors... that S should have got up there. Anyway, and sinners, and you're going to write down, they ate with Jesus. Write that down on your, if you're doing the notes thing, you're going to write down right somewhere next to that ball, they ate with Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes complained. So, okay, we got these two groups of people, both, by the way, in the diagram, they're connected to the heart of God, right? But they're on like opposite sides. We got the tax collectors, and you know, tax collectors were bad guys in the time. So just think, oh, bad guys. I don't know what we'd call them now. I don't know, they're drug dealers, or maybe, you know, depends on your point of view, they're Republicans or they're Democrats. I don't know what they are, but they're bad guys. These are bad guys to the common people, and sinners, you know, like, it's... To me, it's like we're all sinners. We get to that. We're all sinners, right? But, ooh, Danny, he's that kind of sinner. Ooh, we don't want it. Gosh, he gets to go to this church? How do we let that happen? People like that don't go here. Well, we're all sinners, but especially that guy. Okay, well, anyway, that was them. And then there were the scribes and Pharisees. They were really like on the other side of the aisle. They're like, Sally. You know, like Danny and Sally, how they go to the same church. Sally is like, you know, Sally was irritating as a kid. I mean, yeah, somebody over here said, as a kid, good one, Sarah. I heard that. But it's like, she would like, I'm watching TV and Sally's vacuuming. I like this. I'm helping out mom. Like, shut up, you know. You're always doing the good thing all the time. Well, that's the Pharisees. I was this definitely the sinners. Okay, that's me. But this is the people who introduced this story. So then Jesus is going to tell them stories. And so he begins, and the first story he's going to tell, he told them parable. He's going to tell them these two stories. And so there on your notes, there's one's about the lost coin, and one is about the lost sheep. Now, I'm doing this handout this way, and this isn't really, I was playing with this with Mike and in a different kind of format, and I was trying, even what I tried to get in my head, I could never get on the screen or on a piece of paper. But what I want to get across here is this story has layers. And in the layers of the story, there is meat for us to chew on at every point. And yet there's a bigger point that we're going to hit at the end that kind of is bigger than even all the layers. Now, the layers are life-changing. Okay, so don't ignore the layers, or in this case, the balls. You know, and so the layers are also important. So we've got these first guys here. God's the big deal, but then it's the tax collectors and the sinners, and Jesus eats with them. And then it's the Pharisees and the scribes, and they complained. And by the way, complaining is a bad thing in the Bible from the very beginning. Complainers, murmurers, mutterers, you know, complainers. They're complainers. And they're complaining. Why does he do that? Okay, then he's going to tell a story. And all this for means God has a heart for all of these people. He has a heart for the lost sheep. And so a couple of points about the lost sheep. They're important, not the big picture, but they're still important. Layers. You see, imagine this. The shepherd in this story, he risks all the 99 for the one. I mean, that's an important point, I think. It's not the main point, but he says it in this way. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And sometimes we have to risk. There is a risk involved in going after the lost, okay? Sometimes there's a risk involved. Sometimes you take a risk, and here he was. And then I want to just think about these two different people, two groups, the lost coin. A couple of things happen to the and that are common in both stories. But one thing that's not is they kind of got lost in two different ways. The lost sheep, can you imagine? Why was he a lost sheep? He might have wandered off. I want to say there's three lost people in this chapter. There's the lost boy, the prodigal son. There is the lost sheep, and then there's the lost coin. Well, they all kind of got lost in different ways. This lost sheep, what was he doing? He's eating some grass. There he is, Danny. He's eating some grass. And Sally and her 99, they're following the shepherd because they're all paying attention. But the one is not. And he's wandering around and looks, hey, there's some grass over there. And then there's some water in a little puddle over there. I'm going to drink that. The shepherd's gone off. And all of a sudden, he wakes up and says, I did not intend to be lost. This is not the situation I planned on. And aren't you like that sometimes? All of a sudden, here you are in your life, and I'm 63, or you're 17, 16, and I didn't mean to get here. This is not where I wanted to be. I got here by decisions I made. I decided not to follow or listen carefully, but I really didn't choose this path, and here I am, and I'm lost. The coin, on the other hand, different kind of lost. The coin didn't choose anything. The coin was just lost. And aren't some people like thinking about this day walking around Sally's neighborhood? It's kind of our routine. We'll go on a little neighborhood walk and talk about stuff. And so, you know, there's people in her school who, from no choice of their own, grew up in a family or not even in a family, and they don't know Jesus. They didn't get lost on purpose. They just grew up lost. You know what I mean? They didn't choose that path. It wasn't a choice. They're just lost. And yet, here's what happens in both cases. The woman who had the lost coin, and they went chasing after him. And here's the point. Here's going to be one of the main points. When they found them, they partied. Okay, they celebrated. And in both stories, it says heaven celebrates just like that when one sinner is lost. Remember, he's telling this story. Why is he telling these stories? Because Pharisees were complaining about Jesus eating with sinners. And he says, look, folks, celebrate. So both parts of this story, really important, the celebration. Okay, moving on. They celebrated, they found the coin, and now then there's the rebellious son. I'm not calling this the prodigal son, I'm calling him the rebellious son. I'm not calling the later guy the older brother. I'm calling him the ungrateful son. We'll get to that in a minute. So these guys got a couple of things going on with them. But for, first of all, the rebellious son. So what's his story? The rebellious son, as we go through this, he has this kind of responses to his dad and to this, his situation. First of all, he says, I don't need you. I don't want you. I'm out of here. I don't know if any of y'all were kids like that. How many of you were ready to go and leave home when you were 18? You wanted out, okay? About half, okay? And then there was the other half. Y'all were just happy, ready to stay home, yeah? Home is good. Love me some mama's cooking. But some of you, no matter how good mama's cooking was, I'm ready to get out of here, okay? This was this boy. I want my stuff. I want to leave. Now, in Jewish times, what this was amounted to him saying, because he couldn't really get the inheritance until his daddy died. So what he's really saying, Dad, I'm ready for you to die. You can't die quick enough. I mean, it was a rebellion. It wasn't just like, hey, I'm going to go to college. You know, I'm moving across the street. He's like, I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want anything to do with your ways. I want my money and I'm out. I'm gone. And so give me my money. And then he goes, as the story goes, he wastes, he uses his money in wild, it says wild living. And you know, I'm not sure what even that is. He said they squandered his wealth in wild living. I don't know what wild living looked like in that day. I got an idea of what it looks like today. But it's probably not that different except for the internet. I don't know. But he squandered it in wild living, it says. And he eventually ends up eating pig food. Which, of course, that's a big deal if you're Jewish and you're eating pig food. It's bad. It's the worst of the worst. It ain't that good for me, and I'm not even Jewish. But he's living with the pigs, he's eating with the pigs, and then in this great line he says, he came to his senses. Boom. This is, again, a very important point. It's one of the layers in this story. And really, you could preach a whole sermon or even a series just on this moment of coming to my, he came to his senses. And he said, I am going to go home. This is what earlier in the series I talked about, the idea that God was at work on his heart. Oops. God was at work on his heart to say he wanted to change his heart. God put the idea in his head, you need to go home, son. And so he started home. And I don't know how many times he had that thought, but he had the thought, and so he starts preparing his speech. His I'm sorry speech. Have you all ever done that? I did that many times. Again, Sally probably never had to do this. But I had to get my speech ready knowing I was going to have to explain to Dad the thing I had done wrong. And at first, in my first early days, I would want to make excuses. Then I figured out that don't work. Excuses don't work with Dad. The best way to come in is just go ahead. I am a low scumbag. I'm bad news. I'm sorry, Dad. I did that. Beat me to death. And then he would only beat me partly to death. But it was like, okay, so this dude's the same. He's getting his speech ready. And it starts out, I'm not worthy to be called your son. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Which I think is going to be real important in just a minute. He said, I'm not worthy to be called your son. And he says, I'm going to get it going. And then he starts walking. And I wonder if he's practicing that speech on the way home. You know, I'm practicing my get ready speech. And then what we got is the dad's response. Well, first of all, before the kid left, the dad gave him the money and let him go. You know, the dad, what he said, no, son, I ain't giving you my money. As a matter of fact, you need to leave home, but no money, because you, what you really did is you tell me you want me to die. I'm going to say, you got to go. You know, the dad didn't kick him out, but he let him go. And sometimes as a parent, you know, us parents, we've had kids we've had to let go, and didn't really want to let them go, but they wanted to do something. We didn't think it was the best thing, but we let them go. You know, that's another story. It's another layer of this. The dad let him go. Well, then It's the great coming home story. This is probably the most famous part of the story, is that dad sees the kid from afar. And I picture this, that the dad is in a rocking chair. I don't know if they had rocking chairs. He's in a rocking chair on the porch, and he does this every evening looking for the son to come home. And there he saw him. And when he saw him, it says, the story says, he got up and he ran. Because that's my kid, you know. And when he gets to the son starts on his speech, and the dad doesn't even care about the speech. He cuts him off in the middle of the speech. So he says he was filled with compassion. He ran to him. He threw his arm around him. He kissed him, and he interrupted the apology. The kid saying, I'm not worthy to be called your son. And the dad's like, I don't care if you're worthy, dude. It's not about being worthy. You're my kid. I love you. I mean, really, it's this love of God that he lavished on him, you know? It's over the top. It's out of control, right? Matt Chandler, right? This is the love of this father. I love you, son. But dad, I'm not worthy. Give me a hug, kiss you. Go get sandals. Go get a ring. Go get a robe. Go get this stuff. Let's get the party started. You know, this is the dad. He is overwhelmed with love and forgiveness and mercy just because the kid is good, because the kid's got it figured out. He didn't say, okay, son, we're going to have a little probation period here. Okay, you're going to live out on a little house outside of the ranch. And then if we observe that for 60 days you've got your stuff together, then we're going to let you come back. You know, and you're going to have to take a course on wild living and why it's bad for you. You know, we're going to have a drug test, of course, where you're going to, your analysis thing or blood or whatever. We're not going to do that. He just said, let's have a party. Because you're my son, you were dead to me, and now you're alive. And I want to have a party. And this is God's heart for you. And here's the question I want to begin to ask already. I hope you've asked this question already, but I want to be very intentional. Where are you in this story? Where are you in this story? Already, were you a lost coin? I mean, we probably have some people in here who are lost coins. I didn't know anything. I didn't choose my situation, but my situation was bad. And then somebody came and helped me and found me. Or maybe you're a lost sheep. I wasn't paying attention. I just got, all of a sudden, I was in a bad situation. I didn't really think about the consequences, and here I am. I need somebody to help me get out of this. Some of us need help to get out of the bad situation we're in. This was the shepherd went and found the sheep. Come on back. And then some of you were rebellious. And I've been that guy. I knew what was good. I didn't do it. I knew it was wrong. I did it anyway. And I've been deep in consequences for those things. Still suffer some of those consequences even now. But where are you in this story? So you're thinking that. Where am I in this story? And sometimes you've had the privilege, right, to be the father. Henry Nouwen writes a book called The Return of the Prodigal. And it's based on his observation and thoughts about Rembrandt's painting, The Return of the Prodigal. And as he tells about his experience with the idea of the painting, The Return of the Prodigal, and then the story that we've just read, he talks about the three different major parts. Again, this is ice cream, banana, and what's the next most important part of chocolate syrup for what? Whipped cream, whatever it is. But anyway, there's the father, the son who was lost, and then what Rembrandt calls him, and a lot of people call him the older brother. And all of us have had that too. I've been the older brother, judgmental. I've been the lost boy. I've had the chance to be the father. Some of you have had the chance to be the forgiving one, haven't you? Where someone has, what they needed most was forgiveness, and you were the one who got the. Give it. Okay, so here we are. This is the dad's response. And then the next thing that happens is, this, in the story in Luke, he starts talking about this other brother. And I call him the ungrateful son. And there's a couple of things about this guy that are important. He is the older brother. He was the judgmental one. But he's ungrateful I think most of all, it's part of his character and nature. I want to see if maybe that's where you might even be too, or at least some of the time. And so his response was, first of all, he's angry. He hears the noise, and it's the party. He hears the noise, and his first thing is, what the deal? I'm mad. He's angry. And so in his gut, in his heart, he's angry, and he would not go in. I ain't going in that party. It's a party going in there, and I'm not going in. It's for my, you know, brother, and I ain't going in. Okay, now, some of us in the room have had great, all from the day we were born, relationships with our siblings. Some of us maybe not. You ever had sibling conflict sometimes and grudge holding? This is a guy, he's got conflict with his little brother, and he's got some bitterness going on, and he's not going to celebrate. And then the dad, one of the things the dad comes up, he comes outside. You know, he didn't just get up off the porch and run to his prodigal son. He got out of the house, he left the party, and went and said, hey, son, come in your brother's home. So the dad is inviting him also to come in. But he says, this is a great, terrible, but I think informative statement. He says, he answered his father, look, okay, this is verse 28. All these years, I've been slaving for you. I mean, dude, he grew up as the favored son. He was the good boy. He was the one who the father loved. He was the one who had everything he wanted. But in his mind, he's slaving. He's slaving. The dad was treating him as a slave, but he had everything he wanted. But that's what he thought. Don't you know some of your kids might think this too? Not y'all. Y'all don't have kids yet. You may be the actual ones who are thinking this. But like, you know, your parents, they do stuff for your kids, right? You've done stuff for your kids. You've done the best you can. And maybe it wasn't great, but you've done the best you can. Yeah, but your kid does not appreciate it. I know this way it is with my boys. I mean, now they appreciate it much more now that they're 37 and 38 years old and they've got kids. They look back and they, whoa, dad had it, you know, it was, dad was pretty good. But at a moment, you didn't appreciate, and this is him. He said, all I did was you was slaving. And then he's whiny. You never gave me even a young goat. Wah. Call the wambulance, right? I think, what? He's just whining. I don't get a party. You never gave me a party. And then he says, this son of yours, like, he's not my brother. This son of yours comes home. You do everything for him. Okay, so that's his attitude. And then the dad, he goes out and then he says this. This is the grace moment of this sermon for me. Verse 31, my son, you're always with me and everything I have is yours. Okay, I want to think about this in grace in your life. Sometimes maybe I don't get to receive God's grace because I'm too busy holding a grudge against somebody else. Or I'm jealous for the gift someone else has. Or I wish my life had turned out like this. I've got all these great things going on for me, but I can't notice them because I'm too busy looking out, judging someone else. And so the story ends like this. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and alive again. He was lost and now he's found. So, where are you in the story? And most of all, I want to step now into the bigger picture. And I want to think about a couple of things about the context. So now in that little white, open, empty box, a couple of things I want you to notice and just think about. And this is also for us as we kind of move forward with some things I'm hoping to get to do with you as a church. But the idea that there's more to the story than just that relationship between the dad and his two sons. But I want you to think back about this story and why, think first of all, why did Jesus tell this story? Why? What's the setting? Okay. Okay, let me give you a tip here. A couple of tips. You're going to write these down in that margin. One is, the context is chapter 14. Just go ahead and write Luke 14. That's all you need to write. Okay, Luke 14 and Luke 15, I think, kind of they go together. And they go together in several different ways. But one is, I'm going to read the first of Luke 14. You just read Luke 15. Now here's the beginning of Luke 14. On one Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat at the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. Okay, there's eight stories in Luke where Jesus is having a meal. If you count chapter 15 as one, because he said he was teaching the scribes. He was Jesus in chapter 15. He was teaching the sinners and the tax collectors, but then the complaint against him, you eat with them. So I'm saying that's a context of a meal. There's eight meal stories in Luke. One is the communion, and one is the story of Martha and Mary when Martha says, hey, you need to come help me because I'm busy. And the other six all have the same conflict, a conflict between sinners and tax collectors and Pharisees and scribes. All the other stories have that in common, all the other meal stories. Whether he's eating with sinners or he's eating with Pharisees, he eats with both. Jesus eats with both. But in all those other six stories, there's this conflict between the two groups. That's one thing I want you to notice in the bigger context. The other thing is, the theme of Luke, there's several themes in Luke, but one of the dominant things is God's, as you write this down in that little box, God's love for the outsiders. And really, I want, and I believe this is the heart of this church. And Steve, even if we had visitors here, I would say that this church, you have a heart for the outsider. Now in Luke, the outsiders were several different types of people. They were Gentiles. They were women. They were children. They were sick. And mostly, they were sinners. Not sinners like Sally, but sinners like Danny. Those sinners. And so, over and over and over, teaching after teaching, story after story, this is the focus. That God's love is for both types of people. Insiders, he loves the Pharisees too. He's disappointed in them. He's scolding them every turn, but he still loves them. Actually, this story is for them. This story is for, it was aimed at the older brother, the ungrateful son. That's why he told it. And it, the story in Luke 15 ends with an open, it's open-ended. The question on everyone's mind should be, what did the brother do? What did the older son do? Did he come into the party? Or did he not? And that's where he left it with them. He said, you guys got a chance. I want you to come to the party. This is, I think, where this church is. We are people who care about the outsiders. And so this is the point also of Luke, and I believe of this story. It's the bigger picture. So here we go. Luke 14, that's a key, I think. The eight meals, that's a key, I think. The dominant themes of Luke, I think. But here's what I want us to end on and think about. So what? Back when I was doing camp, there was one period of time where I would plant a person in the audience. And after a few meetings, you know, everybody knew this was going to happen somewhere. And they had a cue. I would give them a cue. And then they would stand up where they were, and they would say, hey, Bob, so what? Okay, so what? And I kind of want somebody to do, I think Rachel should do it, right? No, okay, but no, okay. No, not me. But Michelle wants too.
Hey, Bob, so what?
Perfect. So, we've had this teaching, you know, we've revisited this story, we've added a few things we hadn't thought of before. This is one of my greatest little side joys I get in life is when Sally will say, so today she said it, so I'm living a dream today. She says to me, when I talked about the lost coin and how that might be a person who didn't get lost on purpose, but just kind of grew up lost, she said, I never thought about that before. If I can ever tell Sally something about that she never thought of before, okay? But really, though, so what, okay? So we have this great story, okay? So what am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? Here's a couple of suggestions. Because these action items, I may have some different ones than you. For one, sibling rivalry. You got some sibling conflict. Maybe the message for you today, the so what, is to maybe you want to take some steps toward dealing with that. Maybe, on the other hand, it's about your attitude or your heart toward the outsider. And for me, I've got outsiders that I claim and then outsiders that are outside of the outside. For instance, I'm a bigot against bigots. I hate bigots. Wait a minute. Right? How do you do that? But I got a little bit of that going on. I can be very, you know, open towards outsiders unless you are one of the outside. Like, you know, if you're in the KKK, I hate your guts. Okay, right? Wait a minute. How can really? Okay, so maybe that's it. Maybe it's that you are out there or you have a friend who's out there and what you need to do is go find that sheep who's lost. And they need help to come back. You know, it's interesting in the three stories, right? One, the woman got up and looked. One, the shepherd went out and he risked. And the other one, the dad just sat on the porch. So sometimes maybe you need to go out. And maybe that's where you are in the story today. So what? Well, here's where I am. I believe that this is for me. That God wants Bob to use my experience, any position or power or possessions that I have to bless outsiders. That's me. And I would like to join you to do that, doing that. So that's me. I want to do that. And if you want to join me, and if you let me join you, I think that'll be fun. I think that'll be profitable. I think it'll give God glory. But I want you to think about where are you in the story? And so what? What are we going to do? We're going to stand up and sing, and then I'll have a closing comment. Let's go. What I'd like for you to do, if you feel comfortable with this, even if you don't, maybe, but if you just put your hands, palms up, that's right out in front of you. I'm going to pray a prayer. And we would just receive. This is just a posture of receiving. But also, I want to say it's also a posture of giving. Amen? And so today, as we leave, what you think about, we're receiving God's grace, but we're also giving God's grace. So let's pray together. God, we love you. And we want to receive all the gifts that you want to give us. Father, sometimes we just don't experience that. And so I want us, you help us examine our hearts, that we could be open, we could really hear your voice. And we could hear you tell us that you are the beloved son or daughter that you love. God, I pray as we walk out the doors and even as we eat lunch with each other, we share time together, but then also as we go out to the other parts of our day and our family, our friends and other people we know and love, that we would share your love with them. So as we receive it, I pray, God, you let us share it as well. In Jesus' name.